Please open a quick public hearing on House Bill 3010. And we won't need to have any testimony this morning. Representative March has asked me to pull this off this morning and have a work group, and he wants to work with the people who are concerned, the newspapers and the DAs and the others involved. He has some proposed amendments they want to get together, and then they'll bring it back. And with that, we'll...
If everyone who wants to be involved in the work group could just sign up on the testimony sheet, then I can help get the work group organized.
Close hearing on 3010. We'll open public hearing on House Bill 2972. Ms. Mowat, if you could give us a rundown on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2972 is one of the fixes for Blakely versus Washington. I know that you've all heard some discussion about Blakely v. Washington, and we saw the oral arguments at the Court of Appeals regarding whether or not Blakely would affect consecutive sentences. This bill would deal with consecutive sentences. It also deals with what are known as Senate Bill 936 credits. When a judge currently, when a judge wants to deny someone participation in alternative incarceration programs or early leave from custody or temporary leave from custody, they have to, at the time of sentencing the individual, inform their clerk to check off the box that they would be eligible for what's called Senate Bill 936 credits. In order to deny Senate Bill 936 credits, the way the law reads now, the judge must find in open court substantial and compelling reasons to deny these credits. Although it is entirely up to the court and really has always, in practice, been discretionary. However, based on the way the statute is written, the Attorney General's office felt it was important to clarify that it would be discretionary and up to the judge still, and that would not implicate Blakely. Finally, it does deal with some post-prison supervision for sexually violent, dangerous offenders.
Thank you. Ms. Skye?
Yes.
Would you like to?
Why are you calling up?
I'm sorry.
Why would you? Never mind. It's up to you.
Would you like to propose that
we can do that. Mr. Berry and Mr. Fussner.
Good morning. I'm Brad Berry, Yanhill County District Attorney and immediate past president of the Oregon District Attorneys Association, and I chair their legislative committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jonathan Fussner. I'm an attorney, assistant attorney general in the Oregon Department of Justice.
Okay, please proceed.
Thank you. Chairman, members of the committee, as Ms. Moad mentioned, this really is a fix for a Blakely issue, which we don't quite yet know is genuinely an issue or not, but the Attorney General's office, and I know I've met and talked with Mr. Fuster several times about the issues potentially posed by consecutive sentences. This is a fix for that, for a problem that we don't know if we have yet, but in fact would cure it if in fact the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court determines that consecutive sentences are subject to Blakely limitations. What this would do then is clarify that the courts have the discretion to, as set forth in the statute, to impose consecutive sentences and do that without making particular findings, which appears to be the kicker in Blakely, where the court is determined or has to make particular findings, then Blakely basically says that those matters need to be put to a jury. I should point out that as this is written, it appears to me that this would really do nothing more than what is already being done. In other words, it wouldn't have any kind of a fiscal impact. I don't think it would have an impact on the number of crimes for which consecutive sentences are currently being imposed, because currently, as the statute has been written and before Blakely, the courts had quite a bit of latitude anyway to impose consecutive sentences, and the findings that they made were relatively easy to make at the time. This really continues to say the judges have discretion on consecutive sentences. These are the types of things that they'll look at in imposing consecutive sentences, and because they don't have to make findings in particular, it should not cause a Blakely problem.
Okay.
I'd like to just echo a couple of points that Mr. Berry made and elaborate on one other one. The first is that I would imagine that any opposition to this bill would focus on the possibility that judges given discretion to impose consecutive sentences would run amok and impose a lot more of them than we have now and thereby cause a fiscal impact. And I suggest to you that that is not likely to happen, in part for the reasons Mr. Berry mentioned. The factors that a judge has to find now in order to impose a consecutive sentence are very broad. And I have, in many years of reviewing criminal cases across the state, I have never seen a case in which a judge said, I would love to give you a consecutive sentence, Mr. Defendant, but I can't do it because I can't come up with any factors that would justify it. And so I think that there will not be an actual impact in the sense of more consecutive sentences if this bill passes. I might also point out to you that we have already absolute sentencing discretion for consecutive sentences if the crimes involve separate victims or if they arise out of separate criminal episodes. Judges have no findings that they have to make under the current statute, and I don't think that we've seen any abuse of that in terms of judges just imposing consecutive sentences willy-nilly. I think the judges around the state impose consecutive sentences when they're appropriate, and they will continue to do that. The other point I wanted to make is that there is a need for action, I think, on this bill now. The reason is we do not have a case, to my knowledge, in the appellate system yet, let alone decided, that decides whether Blakely applies to consecutive sentences. It's the Attorney General's opinion that does not, and so this it may be entirely unnecessary to fix this Blakely potential problem. But the difficulty is we won't know the answer to that for probably a year or two at least, I would think. And in the meantime, we're imposing consecutive sentences under the current scheme. And if a court eventually decides, well, that was a Blakely violation, we're going to have a lot of consecutive sentences that are going to be endangered. To pass House Bill 2972 will solve that problem and head off a potential much larger problem down the road. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions to the committee?
So, Mr. Fussner, would you suggest an amendment just adding an emergency clause to this bill?
That's a very good suggestion. Thank you. That should have been in there. I think it should be.
And I have a second technical question. Ms. Sky and I actually were talking about this bill yesterday, and I don't understand. Line 27 on page 1, are for offenses of the same class. Could you explain that?
Yes. The way that the statute currently reads, one of the bases, and this is ORS 137.123, subsection 5, one of the bases on which the consecutive sentence can be imposed is, and give me a moment and I will find it here, subsection A, if the criminal offense for which a consecutive sentence is contemplated was not merely an incidental violation of a separate statutory provision in the course of committing a more serious crime, but was an indication of the defendant's willingness to commit more than one criminal offense. That's clumsily worded, perhaps, but I think what that means is if you have a robbery, and in the course of the robbery, the robber reaches into the victim's pocket and pulls out his wallet, that reaching into the pocket and touching the victim could conceivably be a separate crime of harassment or possibly assault, but it would be considered merely an incidental violation of a law in the course of committing a more serious offense. If the defendant not only robs the victim but beats them senseless, then a judge could impose consecutive sentences, and the idea being there you have a separate intent to commit another serious crime in the course of committing a different crime. The difficulty with the way the statute is worded now, or maybe it's not a difficulty, but the way it's worded now, one of those offenses has to be more serious than the other one. This is a very difficult thing to explain, but the way it's worded now, you have to have sentences that are of differing severity before this statute kicks in and permits consecutive sentences based on that factor. Now, we have always taken the position at the Department of Justice, although we've never gotten a decision from a court on this, we've always taken the position that if you have two crimes of equal seriousness, the judge can sentence those consecutively, because the only time that in other words, can sentence them consecutively without making any departure findings. The only time departure findings are needed, as I said, is if you have sentences of differing severity. And so, line 27, sorry to have gone on so long about this, but it's a difficult concept to explain. I'm just sorry about that. Line 27 is designed to make it explicit and to clarify the existing statute and to say, if you have two crimes, even if they arose out of the same criminal episode and involved the same victim, and they are of the same level of severity, two Class B felonies, the judge has discretion to impose consecutive sentences.
Thank you.
Further questions?
I'll just follow up question, Mr. Chair. So just curious, then, as you've said that, then, so that takes care of the fix with Blakely?
For consecutive sentences, Mr. Chair and Representative Olson, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Fessner, I'm trying to understand the text of the that's being substituted in here, and it looks to me like when I look at toward the bottom of page one that we're creating discretion for the court, or actually discretion continues to exist for the court regardless, but that we've identified two areas, that is, where there are different victims and where there are offenses of the same class, where we have maybe a different standard of discretion. That's what I'm wrestling with here, to understand the difference between A and B in subsection 4. Can you help me out there?
I think what the bill does is the following. You have down on line 20, starting at line 22 of the first page, the bill provides that the court has discretion to impose consecutive sentences, and then there's a colon, you have subsection small a at line 25. If the convictions on which consecutive sentences are imposed, and then you have A and B, and those are the two bases on which you can impose consecutive sentences. Either different victims, same class of offenses, or, and here's the one that the intent of this, following couple of sections, the intent of this was to retain the same factors that judges use now in imposing sentences where the defendant demonstrated the willingness to commit more than one criminal offense, or where a victim got greater or different loss or injury or harm from the separate conviction that's being sentenced consecutively. And the intent here was to retain those factors that courts are required to look at now, but to merely make them guidelines in the genuine guideline sense, things that the court should consider, but not findings that the court must make.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
And that's helpful, but what I was truly trying to understand is the relationship between lowercase paren a under the now what will now be subsection 4 and lowercase b. That is, in either case, the court has discretion, and under b, there are a range of factors that the court takes into account, and then under a, it appears you don't consider those factors, but if either of these standards is met, that is, there are different victims or there are offenses of the same class, then you don't go to that other list. That's what it looks like the mechanics of it are.
Mr. Chair, Representative McPherson, that's exactly correct. I'm sorry, I should have seen the question. Yes, subsection A is one that includes two factors where there's no additional consideration that the judge has to make other than were they separate victims, are they of the same class. It's only if you get into subsection small b that we've kept these other additional factors that are maybe more of a weighing type discretion. But the overall point is to remove the requirement for making findings and simply say if the judge considers these factors, the judge then has discretion to impose a consecutive sentence.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Skye.
Good morning.
Morning.
Kelly Skye, appearing legislative representative for the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. I almost announced myself as though I was in front of a judge. I apologize. Chair Barker, members of the committee. OCDLA opposes House Bill 2972, and the primary reason is the reason that Mr. Fussner from the AG's office mentioned, and that is that it's not been determined that Blakely is going to be an issue. And in fact, in the opinion of the Attorney General, it's not going to be an issue, and so this fix is not necessary. Secondary, during the interim, the legislature put together a Blakely work group, and many of you are familiar with its work. They've probably made presentations, at least to some of the members. That work group was comprised of judges, members of the legislature, prosecutors, representatives from the AG's office, representatives from the defense bar, Craig Prinz from the Criminal Justice Commission, and other members. And they looked at Blakely and all of its possible implications, and they crafted a response to Blakely that would encompass this if it does become a problem. And we don't have a draft of that Blakely response yet, but I spoke briefly with Mr. Prinz prior to coming here, and he indicated that, yes, it would cover consecutive sentences if it's determined that consecutive sentences are covered by Blakely, because the way that they crafted the language was broad enough to say that any factor that will that requires a jury finding then could be put through the process, the so-called Kansas plan that they are formulating. So we back that Blakely workgroup's plan. We took part in that workgroup, and a number of people worked very hard to come up with a solution, and we think that that workgroup was given an opportunity to really look at the costs and all of the implications arising from the Blakely decision, and that that is the appropriate response to any Blakely issue. So that said, I do also think that this will be a significant change, and if you were to adopt House Bill 2972, it would be a significant change in the way that sentences are determined to be concurrent or consecutive, and that is that, focusing me back down on page 1, lines 27 through 30, line 27 does not replace the language in lines 28 through 30. And I'll try to give you some examples to explain why. I disagree with Mr. Fussner's representation that those two things mean the same thing. When you say that a criminal offense is not merely an incidental violation of a separate statutory provision in the course of commission of a more serious crime, but rather was an indication of a person's willingness to commit a further crime, I'm looking at, there are a lot of crimes on our books that that apply. If you commit one act, you can violate a number of separate statutory provisions. And in some cases, such as the example that Mr. Fussner gave, it will be a more serious offense with a lesser offense. But in many occasions, they will be crimes of the same class. For example, identity theft is a Class C felony. Forgery in the first degree is a Class C felony. Theft in the first degree is a Class C felony. Those are three crimes. And so if one person steals someone's check, poses themselves as that person, writes their name, they've thereby forged the check, they've possessed a forged instrument, which is a separate crime I hadn't listed, they get the money, they've thereby stolen that money, they've committed all four offenses, three of which are of the same class. But it's one act, and that is precisely what this language is getting at. It's an incidental violation of three separate statutory provisions in the course of commission of one crime. But under current law, you would not be able to get consecutive sentences because it's one act that violated three separate statutory provisions, and a judge would be required to look at that. This will change that. They're all crimes of the same class, so now they would be eligible for consecutive sentences. So I do think that this is a significant change, and I think it's something that that requires a longer look quite frankly, that more parties should be involved in looking at this if we're going to change it in response to the Blakely case. And so I would ask that you have the Blakely work group look at this and determine whether this is necessary and whether this is an appropriate response.
Questions?
Ms. Skye, are you on the work group?
No, we have a representative, Bob Homan.
And did Mr. Homan communicate with you about the fact that the work group actually discussed this pending legislation?
No.
Okay. I do know that Mr. Berry sits on the work group, and I don't know if the committee is interested in hearing about the work group's discussion about this particular bill, but I know it has been discussed.
That would be.
Further questions to Ms. Skye?
No, I don't have any other questions. I want to pursue that,
okay.
That line, though.
Questions? Okay, thank you. Mr. Berry, do you want to?
Good morning again. Chairman Barker and members of the committee, I do sit on the Blakely work group, and Ms. Skye is correct that there are members of kind of all areas of the criminal justice system represented on that group. And she further is accurate that the drafting of the proposal that will come forward was designed to say that anything constitutionally required to be put before a jury and then sets up the process to do it. So if Blakely is expanded to do other things that we didn't anticipate, the language was drafted to say, all right, here's a process to go by it. If I may step back, part of the problem that we have today with the Blakely ruling is that defense counsel often takes the position that Blakely requires us to plead and prove aggravating factors from the guidelines, but there's no process to do it. Thus, you can't get aggravating factors. The Blakely work group was set up to look at how do we deal with the aggravating factors under the guidelines. And that was the principal focus of it. During the discussions at the Blakely work group, there were two things that we talked about that we were aware were going to be out there pending. One is this bill, which deals with the issue of consecutive sentences. The other dealt with the issue of sexually dangerous offenders, both being dealt with in separate bills to take care of that problem. Although, and candidly, Ms. Skye is correct, that the end product of the Blakely bill probably would cover consecutive sentences, we were well aware that this issue was out there by itself, to take care of the consecutive sentencing issue all by itself.
Okay. Questions?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Berry, I'm still confused. Why is this issue coming forward as separate legislation, not as a product of the Blakely work group? I mean, it's in response to the Blakely issues, and there was a group that was, the various players in the process who are working through those issues. So I still understand how this thing comes forward separately.
Chairman Barker, Representative McPherson, and members of the committee, the Blakely work group was initially put together to look at aggravating factors all by itself. It was during those discussions that we just kind of wondered what would happen if the Blakely line of cases threw something else at us that we haven't seen, that was unforeseen. The issue of consecutive sentences was one of those that jumped up immediately after Blakely as, does it cover it or does it not? And thus it moved quickly to say, we need to go fix this so that it's not a subject of, it doesn't become a Blakely problem. And the issue of setting up, really, if you look at the statute, it does nothing different than what judges, this bill, does nothing different than judges, what judges have been doing. It just takes it out from requiring courts to make findings to say that you'll consider these things and do the same things you've always done. And that was a relatively simple fix. The issue of aggravating factors under the guidelines was much more complicated, and I would suggest to you that we had some spirited discussions about, for example, making the entire guidelines advisory. In other words, the court doesn't need to make findings. That was not the end result that came out of the work group. There were other ideas about how do we candidly end run Blakely so that we can continue to have the system that we have. And ultimately, the Kansas-like model was the one that got the most support out of the committee. But we principally were dealing with aggravating factors under the guidelines, not everything else that possibly could come up.
So if I could ask, just sort of to clarify, the work group was put together to deal with the immediate effect of Blakely on Oregon's sentencing guideline grid, which is what Blakely specifically dealt with in Washington State's comparable system, correct?
Correct.
And there are other possible issues out there because this statutory language, for example, requires findings, although no one's really sure whether or not Blakely is going to apply to something like consecutive sentences. And so the work group's primary mission of dealing with the direct effect of Blakely did not deal with consecutive sentences.
The work group's primary focus when we started was to save the guidelines, a system that we've been used to since 1989 and was working. That was its primary function. I might point out there are other unresolved issues out there. For example, does the court have authority to order the payment of restitution, since the court has to find a restitution amount? That's one of those why we left the language broad enough in the proposal out of the Blakely work group to say, if it's constitutionally required to be put before a jury, here's your process. For example, restitution.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the Blakely fix that's involved in this bill is dropping the word fines in line 24 of the, on page 1 and substituting for it on in line 1 of page 2 concludes.
Correct.
Okay, but then it would seem as though there's more being done than just that substitution, changing fines to concludes, because there's the breakout into an A and a B, lowercase a and b, and a it carves out these two categories of area, which are committed against separate victims, which on its own would be sufficient for the court to apply discretion to apply consecutive sentences, or offenses of the same class. And as Ms. Sky pointed out, that's really quite a different standard than what was in the old language that's being deleted on lines 28 and through 30. That is, that it's a was a course of commission of a more serious crime. I mean, there's related standards, but I guess it does seem to me that there's more being done here than just the substitution of concludes for fines.
Chairman Barker, Representative McPherson, and members of the committee, if I may, I'm going to take half a step back here. I'm in the trenches daily with judges on sentencings. I have a small enough office that I've got to be up there with my deputies all the time. I can tell you that as this is worded, it's no different than how we do it every day. Now, having said that, let me address comments to your question directly. First, under A, different victims is already a statutory basis upon which consecutive sentences can be imposed, period. If you have separate victims, the court may impose consecutive sentences. And I leaned over to Mr. Fussner. I actually think that's part of the Oregon Constitution at this point, but I'm not sure of that. As for separate offenses, the court already reviews whether or not we have this incidental violation of a separate offense or something which is more, I would suggest, more substantive. And I might, not to be overly graphic, but to show how serious this can be, I have a case going to trial beginning April 12th where these offenses of the same class are important because the victim in this particular crime was kidnapped, raped, and sodomized. And each of those are Class A felonies, which all occurred one after another. As you can see from the language, we're talking about an uninterrupted course of conduct. The issue there that the court already has dealt with in dealing with pretrial issues is whether or not the court would have authority to impose separate sentences for that conduct, whether or not the kidnap is separate from the rape, which is separate from the sodomy, all of which the state would argue are separate offenses, and the willingness of the defendant to commit separate offenses. Those are the types of offenses and decisions and conclusions that the court would make in determining whether or not consecutive sentence is appropriate or not. I don't know if that answers your question directly, but I illustratively, that's how I view things in my world, and it seems to make more sense to me.
But no, it's very helpful to me. Although I'm trained as a lawyer, it's not my area of practice at all, so it's very helpful to get comments from people who are in the process. Just one more question, if
please.
I could, Mr. Chair, and that is, we all have the more direct Blakely fix legislation coming forward at some time later here in the session, dealing with the sentencing grid, is that right?
Correct.
Okay, and when will that be, your staff or Mr. Berry?
The work group met a week and a half ago approximately to review the bill in its current form. There were suggested amendments that are at legislative council currently, and the Senate Judiciary Committee is going to be having a hearing this Thursday on the Blakely Work Group bill. If the timing works out, we are actually going to hear it in Coos Bay. If it makes it to the House in time, we'll hear it in Coos Bay. Because Judge Barron, who sat on the work group, is a judge in Coos County. If the timing doesn't work out, the alternative Blakely fix bill, the sentencing guidelines as discretionary bill, is going to be heard in Coos Bay to sort of give us an opportunity to begin talking about Blakely issues. But I think everyone believes the work group bill is going to be the bill that passes out of the that is the preferred bill, I guess, is what I'm inartfully saying.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the advisory bill was one that was crafted at the request of the District Attorneys Association, and as it's turned out, it's more of a placeholder to have that discussion. I think Ms. Moad is correct that the bill, which is I've kind of referred to as the Kansas-like model, probably will be one that will gain more favor. And in fact, in my organization and the District Attorneys Association, we have some DAs who actually favor that approach, some who favor the advisory, and there's actually a third approach that's not been drafted. So I expect that as she's indicated, as Ms. Moet has indicated, that's the likely place that the legislature will be spending their attention on that issue. The two other issues, one of consecutive sentencing here from 2972 and the other with sexually dangerous offenders, were dealt with separately because we knew those were highly, highly likely to be potentials, and because they currently have a process whereby judges exercise discretion anyway, they were an easy fix outside of having to put them in front of the jury individually.
Mr. Chair, didn't the work group struggle for 6 months, 8 months working on this?
Chairman Barker, Representative Krieger, yes.
And then Chair Barker, myself, and Senator Burdick met with the group here near the beginning of the session. And I think our calmness was, and you can see from Representative McPherson, it's extremely complicated. And when you have the legal minds can't come to the together for a fix that they can't all agree, in other words, because of the different values they have. And I asked them, well, do you want three retired cops, a businesswoman, a radio broadcaster, and I went on to describe all of our people, to do this with no hearings, or do you want to come together and give us something to work with? And then we thought we got them going down the track. By the following Monday, they did have something, and now they've gone back and they're working through the process. So there's been a lot of work, and it's a very complex issue.
Thank you. Thank you.
We'll move to work session on House Bill 2972. My intent would be that we would pass this. We don't have the emergency clause in that, and we would amend that and take this before the full committee down in Coos Bay. That being said, if I could have a motion.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would make the motion then to move House Bill 2972 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Call the roll, please.
Representative McPherson?
I'd like to give a little explanation here. Mr. Chair, I'm going to vote no on it, even though I'm not, my mind's not made up on the bill, but I just, it's unsettled. And so I'm going to register reservations in that way, and may well support the bill in full committee. So I vote no.
Thank you.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
Okay, and I'll have Representative Olson carry that to the full committee. Thank you. Okay, now I'll open a work session on House Bill 2312.
Mr. Chair, this bill, we have had two public hearings on the first on February 17th, the second on March 10th. After the March 10th public hearing, this committee requested an amendment, and that is reflected in the Dash 1 amendment, which everyone should have. As you will all recall, this bill is the Affidavit of Innocence bill. It would allow individuals, or the laws, it's currently written, allows individuals who were convicted after a trial to request that any DNA testing be done. They have to file an affidavit of innocence in order to do that. The bill, as it currently is written, simply eliminates the sunset clause that was put in place that would require, or would basically, this bill, the law would go off the books in July of this year. Dash 1 amendments extend the sunset provision through no later than 48 months after January 1st, 2006. So it gives it another 4 years on the books for anyone who has gone to trial and been convicted to file this affidavit of innocence.
Any questions from the committee? Discussion?
So
we need a motion with the amendment.
Well, first we need a motion to adopt the amendment. Okay.
Could I have a motion to adopt the amendment?
Sure, Mr. Chair. I move that the amendment to 2312 be adopted.
Are there any objections? So ordered. And now an amendment for the...
Mr. Chair, I move that 2312 with the Dash 1 amendments be moved to the full committee with due pass recommendation.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher, carry.
Okay.
Any further business to come before the committee today?
No, thank you.
meeting adjourned. Thank you.